All right, all right. Start talking, Horton. It's your dang talk show. All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is the show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm on APS Radio News and Daily Paul Radio and this, that, and the other thing. You know, sorry for the screw-up there. I think what happened was I started the program too late. Just like at, 58 or 59 or something. But it was supposed to already have done some scheduled tasks at 55. So I broke its brain. So then when it was at the top of the hour, it just sat there like an idiot. Like me. I was also just sitting here, wondering to myself, what have I done? It happens from time to time. All right, well, if there's one thing I'm good at, it's picking guests to have on the show. That may be the only thing I'm good at. But Ray McGovern's going to be here, and John Glazer's going to be here. And honestly, I need a Dr. Pepper too, man. I don't really feel good. I hope I will remember to try to just keep my mouth shut and let these guys say what they have to say. Ray McGovern on Ukraine, John Glazer on Africa. Of course, predominantly Nigeria. And then I do have a ton of news to cover here and, moralizing and complaining and all that to do. So there's that. All right. Now, you know what I was going to do is I was going to write a post. I got held up because then I became unsure of whether there was going to be a show or not. Thank you again to Allison from Daily Paul for getting everything straightened out over here. She's one of them level 10 computer geniuses who actually knows what she's doing rather than just clicking on stuff and hoping it works, which is how I operate, She's got us all fixed up here. All right, so I got to write a post. Today, Ray McGovern and John Glazer, 3 to 5 Eastern. That's right now. Right here at All Over the Place. Right here is where I got to start copying and pasting a bunch of things. Click the stress block there. Yeah, this is the most entertaining part of the show, when I talk about what I'm clicking on as I write a blog entry here. And then it's supposed to, God dang it, Bobby. It's supposed to automatically post to Twitter there, too, once I publish it on the Stress blog. So I hope that happens. Then maybe Twitter people will know that there's a show on today and they'll want to listen to it. All right. So I could talk about Ukraine. That's obviously the most important thing. But Ray McGovern's going to be on the show to talk about that. And there's so much other stuff to cover, including drug war stuff, which is something that, matters a lot to me, but it's not something that I cover on the show very much, but I want to. Check, check, check. Oh, Allison's asking if my mic is dead. Is my mic dead? Can everybody hear me? Why is an ad playing at 10 minutes after? Allison, if you can hear me, everything is screwed up. It's playing ads. Can you hear me? What in the hell? You know what? I better log in the chat room. It looks like the crisis ain't over yet. Hey, crisis, are you over yet or not? Can anyone hear me at all, I wonder? Well, chat room guys, don't answer yet because I ain't in there yet. But give me one sec. If I can get this capture to work. All right. I think I'm in. Did it work? Did it work? I'm in. Hey, chat room guys, can you hear me? Is the show happening right now? That's funny. Wow, Allison says, nope, dead air for her. I've got, it says encoded. Doesn't say encoding, it says encoded. No output sound, she says. Yeah, I better play some music so I can type to her and see what the hell is going on here. Open this. That'd be fine right here. No, don't play that, Scott. Play something. I don't know what to play. Oh, I know. I'll play Tom Friedman.
Now that the war is over and there's some difficulty with the peace, was it worth doing?
I think it was unquestionably worth doing, Charlie. And I think that looking back, I now certainly feel I understand more what the war was about. We needed to go over there, basically, and take out a very big stick right in the heart of that world and burst that bubble. And there was only one way to do it. And what they needed to see was American boys and girls going house to house from Basra to Baghdad, and basically saying, which part of this sentence don't you understand? You don't think, you know, we care about our open society? You think this bubble fantasy, we're just going to let it grow? Well, suck on this, okay? That, Charlie, was what this war was about. We could have hit Saudi Arabia. It was part of that bubble. Could have hit Pakistan. We hit Iraq because we could. That's the real truth.
I love the way Charlie Rose says, okay. Isn't that the greatest soundbite ever? This is America's foremost public intellectual. Why do we attack Iraq? Why did America launch this war that I sure led us into? I never really knew either. But now that I thought about it, I thought because we had to just prove that we're willing to massacre hundreds of thousands of innocents if you make us angry. And it could have been Pakistan. It could have been Saudi Arabia. At least those governments had sort of kind of something to do with what was going on there with that attack. But, hey, why not kill, what, all the Shiites between Baghdad and Basra? Who could not possibly have had anything to do with 9/11? What the hell is this guy talking about? Could have been anybody, he said. We just had to kill somebody, he said. That is America's foremost public intellectual. We just had to go and send somebody else's kid to be all macho. Suck on this, he said. To which Charlie Rose responds, okay. Yeah. Well, all right. No wonder that guy has the most important interview show in America, right? Am I just mumbling? Is the mic too low? Is that the problem? Somebody having a problem hearing me today on the show? I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. I think maybe there are going to be some commercials, perhaps. I know that spots played for no reason at 10 after. So I think, Jimmy says he can hear me. That's good. Smiles can hear me. He's listening to Descent. Anomaly Radio is picking up from Descent. So that's good. All right. Fitzy G can hear me on Descent. I don't know about anything else. Allison can. Oh, she played the commercials to see if it worked. I gotcha. All right. Okay. Well, I'm Scott, and it looks like everything's fixed as far as the hell I can tell. Okay, good. And in a minute, this most horrible spot in the history of American broadcasting will be over. And when we... segment, I guess. When we get back from the spots, then good talking. Good talking about how America, is the leading cause of polio on the planet Earth. Doesn't that just make your bosom swell with pride? Don't you just want to shed a tear? All those who fought for our freedom, our society, our murderous world empire could be the leading cause of polio on the planet Earth. Me too. It makes me want to go to a ball game, drink Bud, eat a hot dog, and wear a baseball hat just so I can take it off and put it over my heart and cry at the national anthem for how much I love the perfection that is the American state. We're number one. We're number one. We're number one. Don't you feel that? It's too bad such a downbeat bumper music out right now, you know? It would have been funnier if it was Black Flag or something. I don't know. Whatever. Hey, quick thanks to everybody who's shopping Amazon by way of the links at scotthorton.org. Good for you. And thank you very much. And for all the donors of all descriptions, I sure as hell appreciate the hell out of it. And I used hell twice in one sentence just to prove my point. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org. All right, you guys. Hey, look, then it played Black Flag on the way back in from the break. Ain't that coincidental? All right, I'm Scott Horton. This is my show. We got a little bit of time for calls if anybody wants to do calls. Ray McGovern's coming up, and then John Glazer. Both of those in the second hour, so we got some time. It's Friday, right? Man, I don't know a damn thing today, do I? I'm like this guy complaining in the song here right now. Yeah, so it's Friday, so maybe that should mean we should do calls. I don't know. Yeah. The number, if you want to call in, is 512-271-4836. 512-271-4836. If you want to take calls, we got a ton of stuff to talk about. Let's see. All right. So, I'm Scott. This is my show. And I got so much news covered. Let me get right to here. All of this stuff, man. And you guys call and talk about whatever you want. First of all, CIA's Afghan pullback criticized by military commanders. And, you know, I don't really know what to make of this. I think I'm buying it. That the CIA is withdrawing a lot, and that the military is pissed off because a lot of what they need to know, they learn from the CIA. And the CIA is saying, well, we don't have the force protection to keep doing what we're doing. We're going ahead and packing up and getting out of here. And so I just wonder if it's the wrong thing to be optimistic or hopeful or something stupid like that, but I wonder if it's possible that they really are going to wrap up this war by the end of the year. I mean, it seems like whoever wins, quote-unquote, wins the runoff elections and whatever, will end up inviting the U.S. to stay. But how many people can they keep? Will they really be able to give them immunity? I guess so. They're a lot more of a sock puppet government than the Iraq government they installed in power was, because they didn't really need us after we helped them win the war. So, these guys... The people in power in Afghanistan now, they need the U.S. So probably they'll invite the U.S. to stay and grant immunity and all that. But I wonder whether the policy really is to just go ahead and finally cut and run. And there's just no arguing based on the facts, right? Obama let them do the big phony surge, and all they did was get tens of thousands of innocent people killed. And then they lost anyway. Is there any question about that? The big phony Afghan surge, 2009 through 12, that accomplished nothing. They didn't change the entire society. They didn't clear, hold, and build a government in a box. Not in Kandahar, not in Marja, not nowhere at all. I mean, that's why General Petraeus will go down in history as one of the greatest American leaders ever, right? Because he was the general of the U.S. media. And won it. All right, and then, so this is the real thing that I wanted to get to about Afghanistan, Pakistan, one big war over there. Pakistan Foreign Minister, fake vaccination program to blame for polio outbreak. And can't you just imagine? I think they even have a scene like this in Zero Dark Thirty where somebody says, man, if we pose as healthcare workers providing inoculations against deadly diseases, why, couldn't that be problematic for actual healthcare workers later? Don't they have that? Or maybe that was in the Discovery Channel version of the exact same thing. Anyway, and then the answer is, screw them Pakis, right? Who cares at all what happens to them? They should have more responsible fathers or some kind of crap. And you know who really knows the truth, but I think even the official story, correct me if I'm wrong, chat room guys or callers or at 512-271-4836 or whoever, but I believe the official story is that the fake inoculation campaign in Abbottabad had nothing to do with narrowing down that house as Osama bin Laden's house. No one related to him gave them their blood over to the doctor. And so it was part of that operation, but they didn't get any decent intelligence out of it. And then, of course, you know, the question obviously is, like angels on the head of a pin, how many children is it okay to infect with polio and maim for life in order to get Osama bin Laden? And it turns out it was completely unnecessary after all, but anyway, what if it hadn't been? But the blowback is obvious, the consequences. Blowback is consequences of secret foreign policies, so people don't understand what's going on, why, and then they're susceptible to being lied to. Oh, they hate you because you're good. That kind of thing. No, these are just consequences. The consequences, the backdraft, call it that, blowing up right in your face. I coined that. Nobody better ever steal that from me. I'm too lazy to write it. I tried to write an article like that, and it wasn't good enough to be an article. But it's good enough to say on the radio, and nobody ever better plagiarize me. It's backdraft when it blows up right in your face. You know, like Libya. Well, in this case, every doctor trying to inoculate young children from polio is considered an enemy of the Taliban and the tribal regions that they dominate. And so this is one of the last places on earth they had polio at all, and yet it was on the wane. It was finally being defeated. And now those tables have turned back in favor of the disease. And then, at least supposedly, and it sounds plausible enough to me, Mujahideen from Afghanistan, Pakistan have brought polio with them to Syria and helped spread it in the lawless war zone there. And this is now a thing in the world. This is now a thing, a permanent part of the history of mankind. That time that America blew up its own war to eradicate polio from the face of the earth. Because of them and their communist ends, means, justifications for what they do. Polio, for Christ's sake. And you know what? Go read this thing by Leah Labresco at theamericanconservative.com. Polio breaks out after the U.S. breaks trust. It's horrible, man. That's the legacy of 21st century America right there. And, you know, I'm no utopian, but the counterfactual is so obvious to me, you know? I've said this a million times, but I mean it, and I like to try to provoke you into imagining. What if Ron Paul won in 88? There have been libertarians in charge at the end of the Cold War. Or what if Harry Brown had won in 96 or 2000? built that bridge to the 21st century for us there. Instead of George Bush and Bill Clinton. How different things might have been. Cold War over? Great, let's all shake hands, be best friends, have free trade deals, and not fake evil economic gangster IMF deals, but no, real, free market capitalism. And once a week, a speech by Harry Brown about the Statue of Liberty and how this is the future of mankind, freedom. And if your regime isn't treating you good enough, you better demand a better Bill of Rights and you better fight to get it. And then he would have stayed out anyway. Right? We could have this massive clash of civilizations, this massive culture war against right-wing reactionary flat earth Boko Haram style belief systems all over the planet. And it would have been perfectly okay because our government wouldn't be in the middle of slaughtering people by the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands at the very same time. And we'd all be rich and free and at peace right now. And it would be great. It would be better. It would be a lot better. And you know what? I'll go back to the Austrian. Oh man, it's all Fox News already. Screw you, Fox News. I'm talking for a second. I'm going back to the Austrian theory of the business cycle for a minute here too, because I saw where our friend Peter Van Buren, the former State Department official in Iraq who wrote the book We Meant Well and all of that, he's lately been writing about poverty and something about Tom Joad and this and that. And anyway, I just thought, you know, I really like that guy, and he wrote this really great essay that I read about poverty and this and that. And it just seems to me like everyone should know, whether you're a libertarian or not. And I said this before, but I've been doing this a long time, so I can't help it that I'm brilliant and I already said all the brilliantest stuff in the world over and over again. The truth is that you don't have to be a libertarian at all in any other way, right? You could be a warmonger. You could be a pro-drug warmonger. You could be for gun control. You could hate free speech and freedom of religion, and you could be every kind of terrible person that there is and still just accept the fact that the cause of the boom and the bust in the economy is fractional reserve banking, the expansion of bank credit, and of course, to unlimited degrees, backed by the U.S. government. And that boom and bust cycle is the root of so many crises going on in our society right now, including all this poverty, where people finally get a leg up for a minute, get the rug pulled right back out from under them again. And now we're in the middle of doing it again and again and again. And so that's the thing. You could be absolutely the worst on the warfare, welfare, regulatory state in every way. And on the police state too. You could be the most horrible Klansman. You could be a communist. You could be anybody. And you still just have to accept the fact that that's what causes the boom and the bust. Massive, artificial, government-backed bank credit expansion. And then that's what caused the artificial boom, which causes the very real bust, which ruins everything for everyone. There you go. Simple as that. It's called the Austrian school theory of the business cycle. Look it up. Right? That's my thing. All right, hang on 1 second.
Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for CashIntoCoins.com. So you want to buy some Bitcoins? CashIntoCoins.com makes it fast, easy, and safe to get Bitcoins. Just deposit the money into their account at any of the major banks they support, and then just email them a picture of the receipt and your Bitcoin address, and you get your Bitcoins. Almost always the same day it clears. In a tough, competitive new market, CashIntoCoins.com has the advantage. A great system and great customer service to keep you coming back. That's CashIntoCoins.com. Just click the link in the right margin at scotthorton.org. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself, WallStreetWindow.com.
Ah, man, I went on so long I didn't even have time to get a Dr. Pepper. All right, well, whatever. Hey, I'm Scott, and this is my show, The Scott Horton Show. And this is my dang old show, man. ScottHorton.org is the website. You can find all my interview archives there, more than 3,000 of them now, going back to 2003. I don't do paywalls or any of that. You can have them, all of them. You know, back a couple of years ago now, so there's been another 1,000 since then or something, but one guy, I guess, a couple of years ago, emailed me and said he had only just discovered the show a year or two before. I've been doing this since forever. I mean, full-time every day since the beginning of 07, but been recording interviews since 03 and doing radio since like 98 or something, but anyway, I've been recording interviews since 03, and this guy said, yeah, he just found me the other week or the other, last year, but he said he had spent the entire summer catching up and had listened to every single interview I'd ever done. Somewhere almost, 2,500, 2,000, 3,000 interviews. So I don't know if you want to catch up, to that extent. Although I am pretty great, But, and my taste in guests is, again, impeccable. So you can do that. ScottHorton.org/interviews. And in fact, ScottHorton.org/all-interviews2. I think. I don't know what happened to that link. Dave! I want the link back up to the all interviews page. So you can see the entire length and girth of my product there. I don't know how many it is now. More than 3,000 interviews now at scotthorton.org/interviews. Okay, and you can follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show, and you can retweet me there too. Okay, good. Now, so, the polio thing. I'm sorry for moralizing so much. I should have just stuck to the news of it. I think everybody's heard of this, but it's still going on, and there's some, I guess, a recent report about it has come out, and this Leah Labresco has written a great piece at the American Conservative magazine, theamericanconservative.com, pardon me, called Polio Breaks Out After the U.S. Breaks Trust. Read it and weep, man. That's just something I don't know. Okay. Nope, that's for John Glazer's interview. Oh, serious stuff, man. Let's see. Once again, U.S. takes stab at promoting a moderate Syrian opposition. $27 million new dollars and an attempt to create another new, fake FSA type thing. Syrian opposition coalition. Let's see. There's a civil war going on. We could take the side of the secularist, Baathist, fascist dictator that George Bush used to hire to torture people for him all day. Because if he's got one quality to him, one positive thing about him, like Gaddafi, it would be he hates and is afraid of Al-Qaeda and is good at killing Al-Qaeda guys and keeping them down. Or we can side directly with ISIS and al-Nusra, who have all declared their loyalty to Ayman al-Zawahiri and the goals of Al-Qaeda, and act that way too with their suicide bombings and their beheadings and their civilian slaughters and madness. Or what's the third way now? The third way is to try to create a force of moderate jihadists who are going to be fighting on the same side as Al-Qaeda, but won't be fighting under Al-Qaeda or with Al-Qaeda. And then, I guess we could expect them to have the support necessary that once the Baath government falls, then they will be able to stave off their Al-Qaeda allies and take power over Damascus. Oh, no, that's not quite right, because all you have to do is fast forward to the end of the article, and you see the quote from the expert, from the official. Because the objective of the policy is not to assure an opposition military victory. It's just to make sure an opposition exists. It lends itself well to fine-tuning. In other words, keep this war going as long as they can, as many people killed as they possibly can. And these are the same people who are always trying to justify escalating their intervention in Syria based on the casualty count that they know that they are deliberately expanding. Ray McGovern has mentioned on the show over and over again about the Israeli officials who have said this is exactly what we want, is let them wear each other down and just kill each other off and yada yada. Andrew Sullivan's old flypaper thesis from Iraq, I guess. Creating hell on earth for, why not? Seems kind of problematic to me, but, you know, what do I know? Yeah, promote the moderates. Not so much that they can win, but just so much that we can betray them. Well, America does this a lot, right? That Bay of Pigs scheme, like they did with the Shiites in Iraq in 1991. Hey, everybody, rise up. We'll help you. Nah, we're not really going to help you. Die. Same thing they're doing in Syria now. Same thing they're doing in Ukraine, really. Hey, you know what you Nazis ought to do? Overthrow the government. Yeah, it'd be great. Yeah, we'll back you up. And we'll see how that works out. Also from McClatchy, Mitchell Prothero. New videos have shown more rebel groups in Syria have U.S.-made anti-tank missiles. These are the TOW missiles, the ones that Ronald Reagan and was it Menachem Begin or which Israeli prime minister worked together with him to sell TOW missiles to Iran to use against Saddam, who, of course, they were also backing. Actually, I guess Israel was tilting more toward Iran and America was tilting more toward Saddam and Iraq. Jimmy Carter, of course, had given Saddam permission to invade Iran in the first place. And Ronald Reagan, of course, had doubled down on that support, sending Donald Rumsfeld in the famous footage and photo there, shaking hands with Saddam to sell him weapons, and including precursors for chemical weapons. At the same time, they and the Israelis were selling TOW missiles to, yeah, that's right, the mean old Ayatollah. The Ayatollah that's like twice as mean as the Ayatollah now. Because, you know, politics. Money. They had a bunch of children they needed to machete to death in El Salvador, you understand? And so they needed to make some money. Selling weapons to the Ayatollah. So there you go. They're spreading around. And, you know, there's the Lincoln Raimondo's article today at antiwar.com from back in 2012 where it's even David Sanger, notorious for constantly lying about Iran's nuclear program, ridiculous war propagandist, David Sanger of the New York Times, in this case conceding, you see my confirmation bias there? This horrible reporter who's never correct about anything, in this case, reported something that makes me seem right. And so I spin it this way. Even David Sanger admits that dear leader Obama's program to arm the moderate opposition in Syria is a joke, and all those weapons go straight to the jihadists, because guess who does the fighting and the dying? Yeah, that's right, the true believers. And, you know, it's true, because Lande did say on the show that, no, there is an FSA, and there are guys who are not, you know, sworn loyal to bin Laden who are fighting, but, nah, yeah, they are just a very small percentage. I mean, there is an FSA, but compared to the al-Nusra Front or the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, no. Not at all. All right. And then, by the way, in other news, and I guess this is why they're cranking up their support, is because Homs has fallen again to the regime, which has taken it a couple of times. I guess it's been a couple of years since they last took Homs, but the jihadists have left. And I think they gave them, they had an amnesty deal where you guys can run, but we're taking the city. Then there's this thing, and I'll monitor about how this Saudis are afraid of blowback. That ISIS guys are already starting to come home. Yeah, you're going to see more of that. Boy, that Barack Obama. No, you know what? He won't go down in history as the greatest traitor ever, whatever, whatever, because even though he is, in fact, his legacy at worst is in the hands of the Republicans. And the worst thing they can think of to say about him is that he didn't have enough security on duty in Benghazi, Libya, where they were funneling guns to the Mujahideen in Syria one day. He should have not. The one day part is the not good enough security, not the gun running, which was an ongoing thing. But that's your scandal. This is how you know that you're a Republican idiot and that you're letting evil, horrible idiots tell you what to think. If you can't come up, you can't scrape, no matter how hard you try, up an objection to an undeclared, which, hey, technically that's a felony, war against Muammar Gaddafi, the secular secular fascist dictatorship. He was sort of a commie, but anyway, who had one virtue. He was deathly afraid of Al-Qaeda and was good at killing them. And their buddies, the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group and Ansar al-Sharia, etc. Those were his deadly enemies. And American Republicans, they can't bring themselves to criticize Obama for fighting a whole war for Al-Qaeda. Now, why not? Because they haven't been told to by the liars who tell them what to think. You know, if Sean Hannity said, guess what, everybody? The Benghazi scandal lasted more than one day. It's been ongoing since the beginning of 2011 when I criticized Obama for not going to war against Gaddafi fast enough. Oops, and then he would have to shoot himself in the head live on TV. And then conservatives would be allowed to, I don't know, can they even read a whole tweet before their eyes glaze over, conservatives? I don't know how they learn what they learn. But yeah, that's a big clue that you've been snowjobbed big time, is if you think that the Libya scandal is the one attack on one day, September 11th, 2012, Benghazi scandal. If you think that that's a scandal, then you're just lost as can possibly be. The scandal is the entire American foreign policy establishment, the leadership of both parties and the war machine all went for it and did a war against a secularist for the Mujahideen. And they should all be in prison. And that goes for Republican heroes like John McCain and David Petraeus and Hillary Clinton, too.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. Hey, all Scott Horton here. Don't you want a bust of Murray Rothbard for your desk at work? A Ludwig von Mises for your bookshelf at home? A Harry Brown, a Ron Paul as a gift for a friend? Check out these awesome busts of your libertarian heroes at myheroesthink.com. They come in 6 or 9 inch sizes and now in color, too. Of course, gold, silver, or bronze. I've got the Harry Brown one on the bookshelf in my office and I love it. Just click the banner ad in the right margin at scotthorton.org and enter promo code ScottHortonShow to save $5. That's myheroesthink.com.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show here. Yeah. Trying to switch my guests around and doing a live show at the same time. I wonder if John Glazer has Ray McGovern's number. Hey, John, if you're out there, why don't you call Ray and you guys work it out? I gotta do a show here. I gotta try and fail at doing a show here. All right. Oh, one more thing about Syria real quick was new one by the great Gareth Porter. UN probe chief doubtful on Syria sarin exposure claims. So Gareth, as we talked about on the show with him the other day, he finally wrote about, you know, his take, best he could tell, about the Syria sarin gas attack last August the 21st that almost led to an American bombing campaign. And so now this is a follow-up. The UN probe chief, doubtful on Syria sarin exposure claims. So you know what? I think that's all you need to know right there. Never mind what Hirsch wrote. Never mind what Gareth wrote. Just take how many of these UN officials who were actually in charge of the investigation or on the ground doing the investigation said, I don't know, man, if this adds up the way you guys are saying here. The fact that they're not convinced means that John Kerry could not possibly have been telling the truth when he was getting up there saying, we know this, and we know that, and we know this. And it was 35 times he said, we know these facts that prove that Assad did the attack. Well, so here's another one. The guy in charge says, I don't know, man. That's enough for me. We almost went to war on a casus belli that the head of the investigation now says, you know, I don't know. Oh, yeah, you know, you don't know? Oh, okay. Thanks very much for making that clear. Appreciate it. All right, now, Palestine. Oh, yeah, that would work. Okay, so, Palestine. Inside the talks failure, U.S. officials open up. And Honestly, man, I haven't even had a chance to read this thing yet, but I want you guys to know about it. It's the article that I was talking about on the show with Scott Ritter. No, Scott Ritter. Scott McConnell yesterday from the American Conservative magazine, where this is at Wynette News, at WynetteNews.com. Inside the talks failure, U.S. officials open up. And this is very important because everybody knows the urban legend, which is all it is, that back in the year 2000, Arafat had a great deal on a silver platter, but he decided, no, he would rather be a leader of terrorists than accept the entire West Bank and East Jerusalem and a Palestinian independent state. That terrorist. And of course, that's stupid. That's not true at all. What they were offering him was a situation, much like they had just pulled off on Milosevic a year before. Give him an offer he can't possibly accept, and then blame the failure on him, and start up the war again. Right? So that's what they did. This time, however, that kind of urban legend isn't even taking hold at all. This time, the official story, all over the place, if you ask anyone except Benjamin Netanyahu. Or, you know, I don't know, maybe Jennifer Rubin at the Washington Post or something, I'll read her. But anyway, nobody's buying the war party spin on this one. Everyone knows that the Israelis botched this deal. And why? Because they never meant to give up the West Bank to be an independent Palestinian state. And they very much do mean to keep the entire West Bank. And what the hell are they going to do with all the Palestinians that live there? I guess they haven't figured that out yet. Gas chambers, maybe? At least, probably, this is my prediction, only because I'm such a damned doomsayer, but I think there's going to be a second Nakba. I think it'll be like, you know, the forced march of the Cherokee to Oklahoma. I think it'll be like, it'd be better if it's like that than if it's like the, you know, 4-year-long civil war for Baghdad that we saw in the last decade. Holy crap. Well, there's nobody to arm the Palestinians that well to fight that strongly, whereas the Sunni Iraqis were armed to the teeth. And then, of course, so were the Badr brigades as well. But anyway, it's such a damn disaster, man. I don't know. And I think it is good news, though, that everyone knows that, no, it's Israel's fault. And you know what? Here's the final confirmation bias on that one. Quote from Martin Indyk. I can tell you firsthand that settlements had a very damaging effect. It was intended to have that damaging effect. It was intended, the announcement of 14,000 new settlements in Palestine. And who is Martin Indyk? Martin Indyk is an Australian who made aliyah to America. How can he best serve Israel? By becoming an apparatchik in the heart of the American empire. And then he, with Dennis Ross, I believe together, they created what's called WINEP. You'll see, oh, here's our expert guest from WINEP. That's the Washington Institute for Middle East Policy. And it's a spinoff of AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, the Israel lobby's, you know, the Israeli government's fifth column in Washington, D.C. And Martin Indyk has been, I guess people use the phrase for the two of them, him and Ross, are known as Israel's lawyers. And Martin Indyk is, you know, famous for defending Israel's positions here. And he's the kind of guy where, you know, when peaceniks hear that, oh yeah, Obama appointed Martin Indyk to go help Kerry get this deal, we all go, oh God, well, give me a break, dude. You know, how much of a Palestinian state could that guy ever be expected to push for, right? You see the spin here. You see the confirmation bias. Again, like David Sanger, here's a guy who's bad on everything, and yet in this case he agrees with me, which proves that I'm extra right. Right? Which is, of course, the same bogus exercise that the Republicans put us through, getting us into war in, well, name it, especially in Iraq. Hey, even Bill Clinton says he still has these weapons and supports the war. right? Like, that's not proof that it's a damn lie and we better not do it. No, that's proof that if even he agrees, then we have to do it. Huh. They did the same thing with Libya, too, from the other way around. Even these Republicans are saying we've got to do this. Even these humanitarian liberals, who we know just are anti-militarist because we know that somehow. In this case, they want to do it. So now we know we got to do it. Well, that's what I'm doing here. Martin Indyk says, yeah, the Israelis ruined the deal deliberately by announcing 14,000 new settlements, they call them. Colonies on the West Bank. Stolen property. Here's a simple analogy that Americans could understand. If Mexicans were not just coming across the border, but they were creating their own massive, you know, suburbs-sized cities and then declaring them sovereign Mexican territory, and then the Mexican army was running around Texas building walls to keep us out and keep them in and taking our land. Yeah, I know, we would nuke Mexico City. President Obama would nuke Mexico City with hydrogen bombs and kill everyone until that behavior stopped. I know it and you know it. That's exactly the direct analogy. Now, I understand that Texas and all of the Southwest was stolen from Mexico, but I'm just saying, I'm trying to put it in a way that people can understand current context. We're talking about a foreign country invading and then moving their civilians into that territory. And then by super slow motion, eventually just conquering the place that way. Now, complain all you want about the Mexican invasion, but that's all a bunch of hyperbole and nonsense. They're not coming here and trying to bring the jurisdiction of their judges to our country, are they? No, they want to be Americans, or at least they just want to swing a hammer here and send some money home and take care of their people. Whatever, like it's your business. But still, what the Israelis are doing to the West Bank is just grand theft country. That's all it is, and there ain't no other way to spin it. Oh, there's one other way to spin it. It's magic, because Hebrew mythology says that we can steal it if we want to. Oh, really? I'm so impressed by that. You might as well tell me you have the right to steal it because you're a Sagittarius. Give me a break. It's theft. And by the way, that quote I got from Trita Parsi's Twitter, but then it's vouched for by reporter Laura Rosen, who says it was at the Washington Institute at a speech last night where he said it. So there, I'm double, extra, triple, lucky, happy, wish, right. And there's no Fox News playing. There's supposed to be Fox News playing. Well, everybody, I screwed up at the beginning of the show today, and I didn't turn on the damn program soon enough. And so it didn't download the news, and so it ain't playing the news. But, you know, that's okay, because I got other things I'll play for you instead. Why not? You know what? I'm going to turn off this. Allison, don't worry about it. You ain't gonna fix it. I'll fix it. I'll come up with something here. And no, don't worry. I won't play Tom Friedman for you again. That would be a catastrophe. But I'll see if I can find something else here. First of all, this one's my favorite. Old Chaos Days.
How can you shoot women, children?
Easy. You just don't need them so much. Ain't war hell?
All right. Well, man, all of these suck. Why are these all my sound bites? Man, I need new sound bites. I know what I'll do. I'll play Victoria Nuland talking Ukraine while I see if I can switch John Glazer and Ray McGovern's times for the show today. And then I'll be right back after this. How about that?
In Kyiv itself, some of the barricades around the Maidan have come down. But you can't compare the situation in Kyiv, where now Everything
isn't
that, is
that trendy
still
of her to pronounce it Kiev? Oh, look at me. You all say Kiev, but I'm so smart that I say Kiev. Shut up.
With the agreement of
whore.
Nevada,
sorry. I don't mean that in a sexist way. I mean that in a you pleasure Kagan's way.
You can't compare that to what's happening in eastern Ukraine, where you have armed separatists wearing baklavas, carrying very heavy munitions.
Wearing baklavas.
buildings, refusing to allow monitors in, refusing to allow journalists in.
This person is the U.S. ambassador to Europe.
Christian, that there were four or five journalists kidnapped in Slavyansk, and one is still being held today. This is not a comparable situation. I didn't hear Mr. Nikonov speaking. The United States has invested some $5 billion in Ukraine since 1991, when it became an independent state again after the collapse of the Soviet Union. And that money has been spent on supporting the aspirations of the Ukrainian people to have a strong democratic government that represents their interests. But we certainly didn't spend any money supporting the Maidan. That was a spontaneous movement, which is a far cry from what we are concerned Russia is up to now in eastern Ukraine.
Would you believe that crap? Well, look, our neo-Nazi arsonist murderer thugs, they have licenses from the government. Because, you know, they overthrew the government and control it now and gave themselves licenses. These other people don't have licenses. That was really the argument she made on CNN Amanpour.
I think Yats is the guy who's got the economic experience, the governing experience. He's the guy, you know, what he needs is Cleach and Tawney Book on the outside. He needs to be talking to them four times a week, you know. I just think Cleach going in, he's going to be at that level working for Yatsenyuk. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Okay, good. Well, do you want us to try to set up a call with him as the next step?
I can't remember if I told you this or if I only told Washington this, that when I talked to Jeff Feltman this morning, he had a new name for the UN guy, Robert Seri. Did I write you that this morning?
Yeah, okay. I saw that.
He's now gotten both Seri and Ban Ki-moon to agree that Seri could come in Monday or Tuesday.
Okay.
So that would be great, I think, to help glue this thing and have the UN help glue it and, you know, the EU.
No, exactly. And I think we've got to do something to make it stick together, because you can be pretty sure that if it does start to gain altitude, the Russians will be working behind the scenes to try to torpedo it.
So on that piece, Jeff, when I wrote the note, Sullivan's come back to me VFR saying you need Biden. And I said probably tomorrow for an attaboy and to get the deets to stick. So
okay.
Biden's willing.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thanks.
All right, y'all, one sec, and then it's kind of nice not having to listen to the Fox News, right? All right, so there are technical difficulties, but I take responsibility for screwing the thing up. It would have downloaded the news, but then the news would have been all lies and might have confused you. So maybe it's a good thing that I didn't do the right thing the right way. Anyway, this is my show. Thanks very much for listening to it. I'm Scott Horton. I was successful in getting the guests switched around. So right now we go to John Glazer from antiwar.com and the Huffington Post and the Washington Times. Left, right, and libertarian. Ain't that cool? Realignment in practice there. And he's on the phone from somewhere near Washington, D.C. How are you doing, John?
I'm well. Thanks for having me on again.
Well, good, good. Very happy to have you here, and happy to see you writing about Boko Haram, because I don't know if you saw on your phone, but I tried to call you yesterday, and one of my questions for you was going to be, do you know anybody who's good on Nigeria? And you've written a pretty good interview-worthy piece here. It's on the blog at antiwar.com. Everything is a threat. The fear-mongering and hysteria over Boko Haram. And if it's okay, I'd like to start with this. Well, you know how it is with the left, right, whatever. The Republicans are criticizing Hillary Clinton for not classifying Boko Haram as a terrorist group, which I thought she had, but maybe she didn't do it early enough, or whatever it is the big threat there. And this would have been, what, about a year, year and a half ago or something. And I had thought that the deal was, and I don't know if the Republicans are acknowledging this at all, John, or if I'm right. I think I am. Wasn't it the case that she was trying to make a gigantic international deal out of Boko Haram, and the government of Nigeria begged her not to and said the last thing these kooks need is to be told that they're an armed division of Al-Qaeda, because that's going to make their day and make them that much stronger and all that, and we would rather try to keep them as marginal as we can rather than trying to make a bigger deal out of them than they are for our own reasons kind of stuff like you people are interested in. And so I guess it's news to me that she had backed down, and she really did back down. And then this is all that the Republicans can think of to criticize, not the possibility of opening up a jungle warfare front for the special operations guys, but maybe we should have started this war a year ago, damn Democrats.
Right. What, backing up a little bit, I mean, it's difficult to tell precisely where, like, if Hillary Clinton was dictator of the world, if she would have done it, if she would have declared, you know, Boko Haram an officially designated terrorist group and so forth. What's clear, what we know, is that there was back and forth among people in the State Department and the Obama administration and the Nigerian government. Like you said, the New York Times reported that the Nigerians strongly opposed making them officially designated terrorists because it would raise Boko Haram's standing and, you know, get them associated with Al-Qaeda and, you know, boost their ambitions to maybe beyond Nigeria and stuff like that. But whatever the specifics are of what Hillary would have done, it's also true that Republicans are making this a political sort of football and saying, oh, it, you know, her reluctance or her failure to succeed in putting them on the terrorist list reveals that she's weak on terrorism and doesn't have, you know, leadership or foresight and can't keep this country safe if she becomes president in 2016. But, you know, the whole thing is silly because anyone who knows anything about the terrorist list knows it's completely fickle and ridiculous. And only its only significance is that people that the United States uses in its empire to try to boost its interests are off of the terrorist list. They're not allowed. And the people that it hates and wants to undermine, or people or groups, are on the terrorist list. It's completely arbitrary. Saddam Hussein was on it until the U.S. wanted to support him militarily against Iran in the 1980s. Nelson Mandela was on it until the mid or late 2000s.
Hey, MEK was on it till Hillary got them off so we could use it for covert ops against Iran.
Right. It became in the U.S. interest to have an Iranian dissident group off of the terrorist list. So they took MEK off of it. So this is a completely arbitrary list. It means nothing beyond, you know, a demonstration of how illegitimate the U.S. government's foreign policy is. So the fact that Republicans are making it an issue is kind of silly.
Yeah. Well, although it would mean technically, right, open up more weapons transfers to other states and more jurisdiction for JSOC to invoke the AUMF to go take their swift boats around and whatever like that too, right?
Well, yes, but, and this is what I've just written at the blog, so if you remember a while back, I forget specifically what this official's name was, but some military official was in a congressional hearing, and he admitted publicly for the first time that there's a list that the government has of groups and individuals that they consider terrorists and Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups and so forth. Basically official U.S. enemies that they don't want to tell us about. It's secret. It's classified. And I think that the State Department's list is sort of a public relations type of list. It's done when it benefits them, when they can make the announcements public. But they have a separate list, which is terrorists, and, you know, these are all the bad peoples, these are our enemies, and they go ahead, the U.S. government, that is, especially the Obama administration, who's unprecedentedly secret in its, you know, covert operations and JSOC missions and drones and so forth. They have their own list, and they operate as if, you know, the State Department has already listed them with this list. And so Boko Haram, and we've been doing stuff against Boko Haram since 2009 and 2010. We've been, sending more aid to the Nigerians, and we've had troops on the ground there. If you read Nick Turse, who writes at The Nation and other places, you know, he's been writing about the infiltration of Africa by small, you know, special operations forces from the U.S. So one of those places, one of those hotspots, is Nigeria. So I don't think so. That makes the State Department's list even more obsolete, because right. The government has their own secret list that they're already pushing. So,
right. Well, and you know, again, and this always happens, it's the same thing with the IRS tapping into the license plate scanner networks and all the rest of it. I'm always making my predictions so far out that no one remembers I made them anymore. So nobody ever says, wow, it's just like Scott said, because nobody even knew me back then. But in 2007, this was a big thing of mine, is that, oh, you just wait. And in fact, I don't know if this really has something to do with it or not, but I kind of think it does. There are some commercials for the U.S. Navy that show guys on, you know, 21st century armed swift boats, or, you know, PT boats or whatever, I guess like swift boats, and they're on jungle rivers, you know, all armed up and ready for battle, and it all looks very exciting. But then you go down the checklist and you go, well, wait a minute, where are we at war where they have jungles? Not Vietnam anymore. So we got that, and I don't think we're at war with Brazil. We just overthrow their government and install fascists if we have a problem with what they're doing. We don't really invade Brazil, I don't think, not too often. So it's got to be Nigeria. Like, this is the Navy project. Like, this is the future of the U.S. Navy. We are going to war up and down rivers in Africa, and it's going to be fun as hell.
Look, the U.S. is training and equipping militaries in Algeria and in Chad and Mali and, you know, Niger and Nigeria and Egypt and, you know, Uganda and Kenya. A lot of these places have jungle areas, especially Kenya and Nigeria and others. So, we're in a lot of places that most people don't know about, and that's kind of the point.
The part I left out was there are huge oil resources in the Niger Delta, so that makes the perfect excuse for securing things that are so necessary to be secured.
That's true. And, you know, AFRICOM, the Pentagon's unit for, you know, designating Africa as, a, you know, under the auspices of a U.S. military plan, is only a few years old. They started in 2007. And, the U.S. has been assembling the rudiments of, you know, imperial infrastructure throughout Africa. And hardly anybody knows about it. And hardly anybody knows about it because the U.S. government doesn't think it's any of our business, so they keep it quiet.
Right.
But the U.S. is training a lot of militaries in Africa and aiding a lot of the governments in Africa, despite the fact that many of them conduct, you know, very ugly human rights abuses, including the one in Nigeria, which we're boosting support to right now. Mm-hmm. So this has been a long time coming, and part of it, when you mentioned the oil, part of it is trying to compete with the other rising power, which is taking advantage of its position in Africa, which is China. They're not doing it militarily. They're doing it economically. They're trying to buy up, you know, oil fields and mineral, you know, rich mineral deposits and so forth in various countries. And they're sort of quietly increasing the amount of trade, bilateral trade, that they do a lot with a lot of African countries. And the United States is saying, hey, whoa, whoa, whoa. Nigeria, first of all, has the excuse of supposed terrorists, and secondly, has tons of oil. And, not only that, but we have drone bases in Djibouti and the islands just off the Somalian coast, Seychelles Islands. And so, you know, this is incredibly strategically important to us, too. And so
that's funny, isn't it, how the Chinese are spending all this money and we're doing it the expensive way, sending the military out and the spies going gangsterize the hell out of everybody and take it from them. All right, sorry. We got to take this break, John, but I'm sorry to you all that we got to take this break from John. But we'll be right back When we get back, it's John Glazer on American intervention in Nigeria. Got to go save the little girls from Boko Haram, don't you know? And the rest of the war on Africa. And then Ray McGovern on Ukraine coming up, too. So hang tight. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation. Edited by libertarian purist Sheldon Richman, The Future of Freedom brings you the best of our movement. Featuring articles by Richman, Jacob Hornberger, James Bovard, and many more, The Future of Freedom stands for peace and liberty and against our criminal world empire and Leviathan state. Subscribe today. It's just $25 per year for the back pocket size print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. Peace and freedom. Thank you. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here. Are you a libertarian and or peacenik? Live in North America? If you want, you can hire me to come and give a speech to your group. I'm good on the terror, war, and intervention, civil liberty stuff, blaming Woodrow Wilson for everything bad in the world, Iran, central banking, political realignment, and, well, you know, everything. I can teach markets to liberals and peace to the right. Just watch me. Check out scotthorton.org/speeches for some examples, and email me scott@scotthorton.org for more information. See you there. Yeah, you know, when I first started anti-war radio back in January 2007, one of my first interviews was Sebastian Younger, the director of the movie Restrepo, about the Korangal Valley in Afghanistan. And he had just done this report for, I think it was Vanity Fair, about this group of rebels in the Niger Delta who were defending their property from Shell Oil in conspiracy with the Nigerian government to deprive them not just of all their property title to the oil, but also was completely, the whole operation was destroying their traditional fishing grounds and their entire way of life. Their entire village society was destroyed and everything else. And they were fighting about it. You guys might remember, John, you might remember, they were kidnapping Shell Oil executives and then brainwashing them into, hey, right is right, man, isn't it? And then setting them free, unharmed. And they did it over and over and over again. Never killed anybody, not of their captives anyway. And I'm not certain of this, but, well, I'm trying to remember who it was that said on this show that, no, those people have been wiped out a long time ago. This isn't Boko Haram. And I don't know whether that kind of, you know, Shell Oil slash Nigerian so-called national government collusion against them and their property rights and their, you know, material interests has a lot to do with what's going on here at all or not. They may be from an entirely different region of Nigeria, for all I know. Do you know what started, you know, this group? What made their recruitment credible? Who wants to go and join a fighting force if they don't feel like they have to?
I don't know a ton about the initial startup of Boko Haram. I know that they're an Islamist group. I know that they have extreme rhetoric. I know that their name means something like Western education is sinful, so they have an explicit distaste for Western meddling in their own country. But the point, you know, that it's a good illustration that I don't know who Boko Haram is, because it's none of our business. And this obsession over the past few days with the abduction of these hundreds of girls, which is terrible. I mean, it's awful. But why is that suddenly a casus belli for the United States to send its military over to Nigeria? Why in the world was there this absurd and hysterical fear-mongering on CNN? I went to the gym, I was running on the treadmill, I was hooked up to the headphones that they have there, and I almost puked all over the treadmill. CNN's Erin Burnett was having the most explicit war propaganda you could possibly imagine. So saying Boko Haram's brutal violence, they burn people alive, they slit people's throats. She was talking to former military generals saying that they are comparable to the Taliban. One of them said they're Taliban on steroids. And then Carter Ham, who's the former second in command of the Africa Command, said they definitely present a direct threat to the United States because they aspire to attack us and our interests and our people. And then, of course, Erin Burnett said, oh, you know, there's direct flights between Nigeria and the United States. And, oh, you know, what should we do to stop them from striking, quote unquote? Like, this is the jump that has been made. They kidnapped girls half a world away, because they're horrible people. Yeah. And then the jump is made to them being an existential threat to the United States. It was the kind of hysteria that you saw right after 9/11 when nobody knew how to deal with these non-state actors and everyone was just so frightened that they were calling for war every 4 seconds.
Well, hell, I mean, the thing is, it's almost honest of her compared to where Obama was coming from yesterday morning, where he's, you know, damn near pretend crying, saying, you know, I just wake up in the morning and I hear that something bad has happened to some child somewhere, and I just want to help them so much by, and he did, he was not specific, because to be specific would have given the lie away, but he implied that what he meant was right-wing reactionary Islamist militia types around Africa and the Middle East, that somehow drop by drop, he said, we're going to make their ideology obsolete because our story is better, he said. I can't believe this guy. Like it's an episode of the Oprah Winfrey Show or something. And yes, and our story that, yes, we believe in the rule of law and we believe in, you know, libertarianism, basically, while our world empire just slaughters innocents from dawn till dusk, day after day, for decades in and decades out, and has backed every dictator in every country that they've ever heard of in their lives. You know, yeah, our story is going to make them set the people free. And also, I've asked the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to come up with a plan for what we can do to go rescue these little girls. Because it is, just like the John Bircher said, it's a one world government, only it's not in Brussels, it's in Washington, D.C. And the FBI is the world police force, and the army is the one world army, and we're all the Reds.
Yeah, it's a heartbreaking story that Obama has given us, and here's how we know it's complete BS. The number of girls that are currently abducted by Boko Haram, according to the LA Times this morning, is 276. The number of children, the high-end estimate number of children by the Bureau of Investigative Journalism killed in Obama's drone war, 247. Okay? Now, if we see the abduction of 200-some-odd girls half a world away as a casus belli that needs U.S. military intervention, despite it being meaningless in a geopolitical sense and having no effect on Americans, then we have to put it in context.
Yeah, like, well, how about all the people who've died in every other non-drone kind of strike in the war in Afghanistan and Pakistan, in Yemen, and in Somalia, hundreds of thousands of people have starved to death because of America's war. Their little babies starving to death because
even
of Barack Obama.
Even if we do them a favor of taking it out of the context of U.S.-imposed deaths from Iraq and Somalia and everywhere, you know, there's thousands of people that die of starvation in places where the U.S. hasn't been intervening. And you know, obviously that's a worse problem than the abduction of 200-some-odd girls in Nigeria. But the reason that we don't see that as a bigger problem is because we're in the vacuum of the U.S. media, which tends to highlight things that is favorable to the U.S. government foreign policy, like Boko Haram, this terrorist group that's been on the verge of, you know, donning their caps with Al Qaeda. So that, you know, now this serves U.S. foreign policy. So, okay, we want to get more involved in Nigeria. Let's pump this story up to the most important thing that's ever happened. When, of course, in the context of either U.S. imposed crimes and deaths or it took completely irrelevant global problems, it's minuscule.
All right. Now, in the last couple of minutes here, I wanted to ask you about your piece about Libya, too, because, well, I think it's important how it was that we got into that war. And I think basically what you write here confirms my own thesis. And this is, again, it's John Glazer at antiwar.com/blog. This one is called Why Do We Really Bomb Libya? And you don't say it in the exact same way as me, but I think basically it's the same consensus that it was a publicity stunt. It was an attempt by Hillary Clinton, as Michael Hastings put it in his article about the decision to go to war, to get off to a second chance to get the Arab Spring off on the right foot. In other words, it was too, and this is what I said before Hastings' article ever hit the press too, was that it was too obvious to everyone, even on CNN. It was just breaking through all over that Uncle Sam is the bad guy behind Mubarak and all the rest of them too. And even Americans were catching on. And so they had to just confuse the issue, just like accusing the people in eastern Ukraine of handing out the anti-Semitic leaflets, or just to confuse the pretty plain black and white situation with a little bit of confusion. Look, we're on the side of the rebels in Libya, because Gaddafi was their sock puppet, but he was expendable, and he was no Mubarak in terms of loyalty, so they could make an example out of him by throwing him overboard. And that's what's led to the current crisis, which you can characterize however you want in the last minute and a half here.
Well, yeah, no, I agree. The list of brutal regimes in the Arab world that the United States was aiding and supporting as they crushed democratic movements in the Arab Spring was very long. So they had to pick one that they could say, look, we're on the right side of history. And they intended to give the impression that they were on the right side of history. But of course, they didn't intend it for it to actually work, because people in the Obama administration and other analysts at the RAND Corporation and so forth are saying, look, if we are able to do this kind of thing and help the rebels in Libya, we'll help the rebels everywhere. We'll help all kinds of democratic movements and protest movements throughout the Arab world. But of course, that would be directly against U.S. interests, because if the people had more control over policy in the Middle East, the United States would hate it. That's why we've been imposing dictatorships that are obedient to our interests. That was essentially what I was saying. And I think that part of it, that's plagiarized straight from you. But I also, in the last minute here, just read it, a reiteration of that kind of analysis in Barry Posen's new book called The Restraint. He's one of these very offshore balancing type of realists mm-hmm. from MIT. And he mentions the same thing in there, that the point was to show the world, hey, we're on the right side of history, and have the Arab world not hate us so much. It was a failed attempt, and it didn't work, but that was that seems to be the whole point.
Right, because it was really, you know what it was? It was a giant lie. It was like sending Karen Hughes over there to say, oh, yeah, no, we only kill you because we love you so much. Well, no wonder right. people didn't buy it.
Right.
It wasn't true at all. It wasn't even plausible. Anyway, so great work, as always. Thank you very much for your time, John.
All right, bye-bye.
I appreciate it. That's John Glazer, everybody. He's at the Huffington Post, the Washington Times, and at antiwar.com. Why do we really bomb Libya? And everything is a threat. The fear-mongering and hysteria over Boko Haram. And now we will, we're already over time, but you're not missing Fox too bad, I guess. But I got to get Ray McGovern on the phone, so you're going to have to put up with this nonsense for a minute. What you're about to hear is not true, or at best, it's a half-truth, and you can't believe it for what they say it means. Phone records, financial and location data, Prism, Tempora, X-Keyscore, Boundless Informant. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for offnow.org. Now, here's the deal. Due to the Snowden revelations, we have a great opportunity for a short period of time to get some real rollback of the national surveillance state. Now, they're already trying to tire us by introducing fake reforms in the Congress. And the courts, they betrayed their sworn oaths to the Constitution and Bill of Rights again and again, and can in no way be trusted to stop the abuses for us. We've got to do it ourselves. How? We nullify it at the state level. It's still not easy, but the OffNow project of the 10th Amendment Center has gotten off to a great start. I mean it. There's real reason to be optimistic here. They've gotten their model legislation introduced all over the place, in state after state. I've lost count, more than a dozen. You're always wondering, yeah, but what can we do? Here's something important, something that can work if we do the work. Get started cutting off the NSA support in your state. Go to offnow.org.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show here. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org is my website. We're on APS Radio News, Daily Paul Radio, Anomaly Radio, and et cetera, like that. Follow me on Twitter, at Scott Horton Show. All right, good. Our next guest on the show today is the great Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst for 27 years. He even briefed Vice President George H.W. Bush in the 1980s. He was the morning briefing guy. And now he is the co-founder of the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. He writes at raymcgovern.com and at consortiumnews.com. And he travels the country giving speeches about peace and about what's really going on and why we need peace so bad. So you might look into hiring him to come and talk to your group, too. Welcome back to the show, Ray. How are you?
Thanks, Scott. Doing okay.
Good, good. Very happy to have you here.
So, this guy, Putin, this, what do they call him, the Ronchevist, he's working diligently at reconquering all of Eastern Europe and re-hoisting the red flag over the Kremlin. I know because I read it in the Washington Post, but I can't figure out why he's pulling his troops back from the borders and why he's urging the pro-Russian dissenters in eastern Ukraine to postpone their various referenda over secession and or even just federalism. And I wonder what you think is going on there. How the hell is he supposed to conquer the world by retreating all the time?
Well, I am prompted to make some fun and say it's all a big trick, Scott. It's all a terrible trick. These terrible Russians are very, very clever. But in reality, it has to do with Putin being an adult and Putin having the high cards. He is, in his own measured way, making it clear that whatever intentions that the Victoria Nulands and the John Kerrys had to pry Ukraine away from Russia and make it part of the EU and, worse still, NATO, are going to founder. They're not going to be permitted. High cards? Yeah. Yesterday was really interesting. Yesterday, Putin and his folks made clear that they're going to deliver on this threat about paying normal prices for the gas that they give to that they sell to Ukraine. Moscow announced that after missing its recent payment, Ukraine will have to now pay for national delivery gas deliveries in advance. Okay, now that's a big high card. That's a very big high card.
Well, and he's got to be laughing his ass off because that means the American people have to pay it.
That's right. You and I, for your taxpayer dollars at work here. It's really quite remarkable because I guess the IMF has already given him $2 billion. So, you know, it's really what we have here is Russia supplies 30% of West Europeans' gas needs, and about half of those go to the Ukraine. Now, the last two times that Russia cut off this gas, the Ukrainians siphoned off some of the stuff that was destined for Western Europe. So, you know, it's one of these things where, as I view it, Putin can sit back and say, all right, well, you rich bankers from the IMF and Wall Street, you want to pay for the gas. That's okay, but you ain't getting no more gas until we get advance payments. This is big. So that's part of it. Now, the other part of it is that, you know, Putin talked with Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, and, you know, they appeared for some circular talks between the East Ukrainians and the government, get things going in a different way. Roundtable meeting is what they call it. And that's quite remarkable that Merkel and Putin would agree on that. And yet the Quisling government in Kiev is not about to do that. As a matter of fact, it announced yesterday that it's going to pursue this armed campaign against, you got it, terrorists out there in eastern Ukraine. With no let up, so the thing seems to be spinning out of control. But the good news is that Lavrov is still talking with Kerry as recently as 2 days ago by phone. They're both out of the countries, but I think that as things progress, the referendums, they'll probably take place tomorrow, but. I don't think they really, or Sunday, I don't think they're going to be worth much. Most of the Ukrainians, even in the East, don't favor separation from Kiev. What they favor is separation from the Quisling Kiev government that we put in on the 22nd of February. That much is understandable. Now, one of the things that's kind of new, at least it is to me, I hunted down a WikiLeaks cable, okay? a cable out of Moscow. I know how they look. I used to serve there. And this is as authentic as can be. It's confidential, but it's out there in WikiLeaks. And it's a cable from the ambassador in Moscow, our ambassador, William Burns. And the date is 1 February 2008, and he's saying, you know, Foreign Minister Lavrov, who, as you know, is still around, he has reiterated strong opposition to Ukraine opting for NATO. They see it as a potential military threat, and it's clearly, quote, an emotional and neuralgic, end quote, issue for Russia.
Hang on, I got to Google neuralgic.
You can't find it. I've looked for it. I use it all the time, but it's not in the dictionary. It's sort of like a nervous reaction, like comes from the same word, I'm sure, but it's not in the dictionary. Anyhow, Lavrov is giving an end-of-the-year review, and he's saying, look, if you guys think that you can get Ukraine into NATO on false pretenses that it's not a threat to us, well, that just ain't the way we look at this. This is, he says, a raw nerve in Russia. Mm. And
there you go, neuralgia. The raw nerve pain, that's what it says.
Is that what it is? Okay. Yeah. So what happens is here, Bill Burns finishes his cable with a comment. Russia, this confidential comment, by the way, classified confidential. Russia's opposition to NATO membership for Ukraine is both emotional and based on perceived strategic concerns about the impact of Russia's interests in the region. Okay, now, what does that mean? Well, that's the 1st of February 2008. On the 3rd of April 2008.
Is that a warning? Is that what he's saying? Is that we're pushing it too far here?
Of course it is. Yeah, he's saying this. Look, we don't, even if we believed that you don't intend us any harm, he says, we have to look at the realities. It's not the intentions, it's the capabilities.
Or he's just telling them to be careful. He's not telling them to stop. He's just saying, we better tread carefully here because they take this very seriously.
Well, he's telling us, in effect, that it's not going to happen. He's saying, look, we're strongly opposed to this, and we regard it as a potential military threat.
No, I'm sorry. Too many he's here. I meant Burns, the State Department weenie writing home.
Yeah, but, you know, he was pretty good as ambassador to Moscow. He didn't have any influence, but he knew what the score was.
Well, he's the guy who worked out this Iranian nuclear deal in Oman.
Well, he almost did, yeah, until he was undercut by the Israelis. Anyhow, he finished up by saying, look, this is not only, an emotional thing. There's a perception of strategic concern because Russia's interests in the region won't permit a U.S. NATO ally right under its soft underbelly. The reason I mention this is that's exactly 2 months before the heads of state in NATO met in Bucharest. And what did they decide? I shall read from paragraph 23 of their summit declaration, dated 3 April 2008. 2 months after the cable I just read. Quote, NATO welcomes Ukraine's and Georgia's Euro-Atlantic aspirations for membership in NATO. We agree today that these countries will become members of NATO, period, end quote. So we agree today that Ukraine and Georgia would become members of NATO. Well, that's 2 months after they were warned by the Russians, look, it's not going to happen. This is a real strategic threat to us. No matter how many nice words you use, you're not going to convince us. Now, that's what? That's 6 years ago. Right now, it's coming back to roost. And now, what Bill Burns and the others are all saying is, well, you know, back in 2008, it looked like we could push the Russians around. Ain't no longer possible to do that. We better come to reality here and realize that the Russians are terrifically distrustful of our investing $5 billion in Ukraine's aspirations for association with the West. In other words, we see what's going on. We have the high cards here. It's not going to happen. We're not going to invade Ukraine. We can just sit back and fiddle with the gas deliveries and all that kind of thing. You ought to stop making fools of yourselves. And that's what Putin is saying. And Angela Merkel, I dare say, has a very different perspective from President Obama because they have huge economic stakes, not only because of the gas from Russia, but because of all the bilateral trade agreements and other agreements they have with Russia since 2008 and before.
All the uncertainty that is bad for markets all around, for sure. All right, I'm sorry, we got to take this break. We're talking with Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst, now peacenik, writes at consortiumnews.com. When we get back, I'm going to ask him about his colleague Robert Perry's piece today, where he says that Obama and Putin have been talking. They're going over John Kerry's head and getting this thing worked out. Hang tight. We'll be right back after this.
The military-industrial complex. The disastrous rise of misplaced power.
Hey, Scott Horton here. I'd like for you to read this book, The War State, by Michael Swanson. America's always gone to war a lot, though in older times it would disarm for a bit between each one. But in World War II, the U.S. built a military and intelligence apparatus so large, it ended up reducing the former constitutional government to an almost ceremonial role and converting our economy into an engine of destruction. In The War State, Michael Swanson does a great job telling the sordid history of the rise of this national security state, relying on important first-hand source material, but writing for you and me. Find out how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy all alternately empowered and fought to control this imperial beast, and how the USA has gotten to where it is today. Corrupt, bankrupt, soaked in blood, despised by the world. The War State by Michael Swanson. Available at Amazon.com and at Audible.com. Or just click the logo in the right-hand margin at scotthorton.org.
We should take nothing for granted.
All right, you guys, no KPFK show this Sunday because it's fundraising time for them over there. And it's just easier, I guess, if they spend that time begging. Hey, that's a hell of a great project there, KPFK. Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, so I don't mind giving up 3 weeks out of every quarter worth of shows, because hey, they let me be on the most powerful FM signal west of the Mississippi River the rest of the time, so I'll take it. Good deal. Anti-war radio Sunday mornings on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, back in a couple of weeks. Okay, good. Okay, we're talking with Ray McGovern. And Ray McGovern, he's a former CIA analyst, and he's now a peacenik and a veteran intelligence professional for Sanity. And they recently wrote a memo directly to the President of the United States saying, hey, here's how you need to start shaping up and flying right and stop screwing this thing up here. And now Robert Perry has written this article, yesterday's, the byline on it, Putin's subtle message to Obama. And he says in here, and I'm sorry, Ray, I didn't. Well, anyway, I'll paraphrase it. He's saying Obama is talking to Putin, and that he says he has sources in D.C. who are telling him this. Do you know about that? Can you confirm that? Does that sound right to you? Anything along those lines?
I can confirm it by the logic of the situation, by what's been going on, and by my implicit trust in Bob Perry, who's one of the few investigative reporters around that's really worth his salt these days. What's really interesting here from a sort of ground perspective, Scott, is that the memo that we veteran intelligence professionals for Sanity put out on the 4th of May got us all over the Russian press. I myself was interviewed either by Skype or in studio by six major Russian TV channels, and some of my colleagues had cumulatively as many appearances. Now, that contrasts with the play that this memo got in the mainstream U.S. press, which is nothing, unless you count one paragraph in a Huffington Post article. So, whether or not our message got to the president, and they usually do through normal channels, it's
certainly... Well, we published it at antiwar.com/blog, so you know he's reading that.
Right, you know that. But as my friends who worked in the old Foreign Broadcast Information Service, they translate these Russian TV programs and articles. I was featured on page one of the Moscow Evening News, interview that I gave. So it all gets back to the White House. Now, whether he's informed by our advice or not, he seems to be following it, given what Bob Perry has been hearing from his own sources, and the fact that things are beginning to happen. When I heard that Putin told them to knock off the referendum, and that he had some kind words for the election coming up on the 25th, I was surprised. I was happily surprised, but these were clearly conciliatory gestures. When I heard that Putin and Angela Merkel got together and said, you know, let's have a round table here. We need to tamp down this crisis. I was also surprised because Angela Merkel had just talked with our president. So things are... Obama, I think, is trying to get things on track so he can avoid further embarrassment. He's looking a little bit like, you know, like the clown that Kerry is, but thankfully, he has precedent. He has precedent back in September when Vladimir Putin pulled Obama's chestnuts out of the fire on Syria. Obama agreed not to make war on Syria, a war that Secretary Kerry said would be a, quote, unbelievably small war, end quote. And we know nothing like that was planned. It was shock and awe. It was B-52s. It was stealth bombers. It was the whole nine yards, okay? Mm-hmm. Anyhow, Obama reversed Kerry on the 31st of August. And in return, the apparent casus belli here, the chemical weapons in Syria's arsenal, behind the scenes, Putin and Secretary or Foreign Minister Lavrov were able to work with the Syrians, and what Putin told Obama was, look, this is going to be all right. We have this worked out. Just don't tell Kerry about it until we get it near completion. And that's what happened. Kerry was mousetrapped into thinking that it was impossible. He said so on the 9th of September, and on the afternoon of that same day, Lavrov got up, but he said, do we think the Syrians will agree with this? 2 hours later, the Syrian foreign minister got up and said, yep, we're all set to destroy all our chemical weapons. Now, what's the point of my saying? Well, that deprived the neocons of their war. They wanted this war on Syria. Why did they want the war on Syria? Because the government was beginning to win, and the people that are the rebels and all those kinds of people were beginning to lose. And what the Israelis and others felt, other neocons, was you get the U.S. in, and that ensures to keep the pot boiling forever. At about this time, Judy Ruderin, a New York Times reporter in Jerusalem, asked several senior Israeli officials, what's your preferred outcome of Syria? And all of them said, oh, that's easy. No outcome. And she said, I beg your pardon? And there's no outcome. As long as the Shia and Sunni are killing each other off, they're not going to turn their weapons on us. This is, you know, just keep the pot boiling.
Right. Now, hey, Ray, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have to just to confirm you, because I was just talking with the good people on the show earlier today about this article in McClatchy Newspapers where they're talking about it's Mitchell Prothero saying, yes, they're going to try again to build up this so-called moderate opposition force. And the quote from the anonymous official at the end is, because the objective of the policy is not to assure an opposition military victory. It's just to make sure an opposition exists. In other words, what you just said. Keep the war going as long as possible. Yeah. While they cry crocodile tears for all the dead kids and all of the refugees and all of the crisis in the society, that's the U.S. government's plan.
Yeah, well, that's the Israeli plan, and the U.S. government is tied like a, you know, Siamese twin to it. I just have to say how unconscionable I find that. You know, that's just as bad as Madeleine Albright saying that the death of 500,000 Iraqi children under the age of five, 500,000, that was worth it under the sanctions, worth it. These people have no experience of war. They have no experience of innocent suffering. And they just are deranged and diverted from any sense of proportionality here. To keep that Syrian thing boiling in a cauldron is irresponsible. We could get together with the Russians and others and put an end to it, but the interests there are to keep it going.
Well, and then back to Ukraine, because that's the problem here, too, is, of course, the right sector would prefer civil war because that's in their interest as their own little Nazi group. It's obviously not in the interests of the citizens, the people of Ukraine in general, but certainly there are interest groups who would benefit from that. And it seems like that's the point of burning a bunch of people alive and that kind of thing, is to provoke a reaction. That's what terrorism's about, is provoking a reaction. So, you know, whether or not, you know, America and or Russia are willing to intervene directly in Ukraine to this or that degree, although they say CIA and FBI and others are there, probably some Russian intelligence are there, but do you think that they would even be able to stop a civil war at the point we're at now, or how bad is this looking to you? One thing we talked about before, Ray, and I'm sorry, I'll be quiet because we're almost out of time, but one thing we talked about before was you're not quite as worried as you might be because the new coup junta in Kiev is so weak, and its military force and even its neo-Nazi brown shirt force is so weak that they can't really exercise state power over the East. They can't take back those buildings and hold them and that kind of thing. And so in that sense, they don't really have the ability to escalate it to the kind of nightmare proportions that we might, you know, worry about. But, I mean, where are we now? And you have about a minute or so to answer.
Well, I think I take some solace in the fact that a lot of this has been artificially stoked, okay? Most Ukrainians, including East Ukrainians, want to see a unified country. All they don't want to see is a junta, is a putsch, which happened in Kiev. What they want to see is a decent respect given to their own regional interests. And I think that since all the things you just mentioned, and particularly the government is so weak, once there's an election, once they have to cope with the price of natural gas and paying their bills, and once all these things kind of settle down, which I think they will eventually, then I think the adults can take over and make sure that the Yasinyuks of this world are gone, and that the neo-Nazis and the fascists and all those people are put in their place. This is possible. It just takes a little statesmanship. I like what I hear Bob Perry saying about Obama and Putin doing this behind the scenes.
There could be worse presidents, I have to admit. Although, Perry lets him totally off the hook for the whole crisis, which I can't abide that either. But anyway, we're out of time. I'm sorry. Thanks so much for your time, Ray. You're great. Ray McGovern, everybody.